Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Hello, welcome everybody to another episode of Pod Strickland. I'm your host, Shwinipu, and this is episode 276. I am joined by my co-host, Prez, that is at underscore Presidente on Twitter. Prez, how are you doing on this fine Thursday night?
Doing as well as Mitchell Robinson on Twitter at 7 in the morning on Thursday.
Yeah, he was up early today. so you know that things are good then. Yeah, before we get started, I do have to make a few announcements. The first being that the Strickland has an Instagram. So please check that out. Give us a follow. That is at thestrick.land on Instagram. The Strickland also has a YouTube channel where you may be watching this podcast. If you are, please hit like and then subscribe to the channel if you're not already subscribed. That would be a huge help to us. The Strickland also is dropping new merchandise. So please be on the lookout for that. We got merch that dropped last week. We should have merch dropping sometime this week. And there should be even one more drop after that. So keep your eye out on that. Peruse through the Strickland store and see what catches your eye. Finally, the Strickland has a Patreon. You can subscribe to it. There are a number of different tiers. There's a $6 tier that gets you access to Pod Strickland, this pod that I host every Friday with Prez. You also get access to the Strickland mailbag that comes out every other week, hosted by Andrew Steele, a.k.a. Doug, a.k.a. the Doug Bag, along with Dallas Amico. You also get access to the Strickland Discord, where the conversation never quite stops. There are further tiers. There's a $9 tier that gets you access to Strick and Roll, my solo pod, where I rant and rave about the Knicks even more. You also get access to wonderful weekly premium articles by Matthew Miranda, one of the best in the business. There are further tiers. There's a $15 tier, $30 tier, $50 tier, and $100 tier. This comes with a variety of additional benefits, like listening in on pod recordings, merchandise discounts, and even potentially co-hosting a podcast alongside yours truly one day. Whether you choose to subscribe or not, none of this would be possible without you. So without further ado, let's get started. The Knicks are streaking. They're still streaking. They won 7 in a row. They absolutely destroyed the Nets last night in a game that it was 142-118. It honestly could have been like a 50-point game if the Knicks cared at all from the second half, but they didn't. It feels good. I mean, I don't know. I've talked a lot about this team over the last couple weeks, and it's just all coming together, and I think they're starting to get some of the attention from national media folks that wasn't there previously, which I find it's nice. But I also think it's like it's kind of funny that it took Josh Hart's addition for people to kind of like understand what was actually happening with this team, because it was kind of happening even before he got there. And I do now wonder if, like, obviously he's been a huge addition. Don't get me wrong, he's helped a ton. But I do think if Mitch hadn't gotten hurt, I think they would have raised eyebrows even before what they've become now since the Hart trade.
Yeah, the Mitch thing. I mean, Mitch is ridiculous, and people are realizing that he's, he's obviously not like some center who's going to score a lot of points. But as far as centers who don't score a lot of points, I mean, he's like thoroughly outplayed Nick Claxton. He's thoroughly outplayed Robert Williams. Like, he's just, as teams err on, you know, undersized guys who can move a little bit and move with the ball and move without the ball. Like, there's very few, it's very few non-Jokic Embiid centers who can make them pay, right? Like, guys like Nurkic, DeMarcus Cousins, like, there's just not many of those guys aside from the two MVP candidates. So, you know, it's fucking jarring. Like, when I turned on the Nets game today, because I didn't watch it live, I was, like, towering over Nick Claxton. Like, both height-wise and, like, width-wise and just, like, thickness. He's got to have at least 35 pounds on Nick Claxton.
Yeah, he dominated Claxton. I know Claxton had some, get like a nice layup on Mitch, but I don't really care about that.
I don't consider Claxton, like, he's definitely a slim guy for a center, but I don't, like, I've never been like, oh, Claxton, undersized center. Like, he's just like a regular center, and Mitch fucking...
I thought before this year, Claxton always struck me as like, dude, is this guy ever going to put on weight?
I mean, he's definitely skinny. He, like, finally cleared the minimum acceptable threshold of pounds on that frame, which is cool for him. One thing I wanted to talk about, Benji of Knicks Film School fame. I don't know his whole at Ben Ritholtz, I think.
Yeah, Ben Ritholtz NBA, pretty sure. Yeah,
Ben Ritholtz NBA. He did a cool video on basically Julius passing guys open. And it stuck with me, not just because the passes were cool and they led to makes, but I think we're at that point where enough guys are grooving and have played with each other, and there's enough of a mix of guys who know how to connect the pass and guys how to move without the ball that you're seeing kind of the chemistry that teams really develop when they're really fucking good and have played together for a while. Like, it's not just Brunson and Randall shot making anymore. It's like guys know what they're gonna do, and even Josh Hart, like, he just joined the team, but his like adaptability is so great, and he's so intuitive. Like that play versus Boston where IQ did his one-legged fake thing, which is like my new favorite thing that anybody on the Knicks does. That you can only do when you catch. You can't do it after you take a step, otherwise it would be a travel. And his success rate on that fake is like 100%. He got to get somebody to jump, passed it to Hart. Hart immediately passed it back, and he just flew to the corner for the three. And like, guys know where they're going to be. Like, it's fucking wild now. It's RJ knows where Mitch is going to be. Hart knows where IQ is going to be. Like, Randall knows where Grimes and everybody is going to be. It's just jarring to see this kind of chemistry, and we're definitely not some fucking pass happy team now, but just for a team that was as good as at offense as we were while sucking at passing, for us to go from sucking to like
bad,
or even like the few passes we do make, they're precision and they're planned well and guys did it intentionally. Like, there's still levels to unlock with this offense. That's the crazy part that you're seeing. You're seeing the passing unlock another level. Obviously, when guys shoot, when RJ and Quick and Josh Hart fucking shoot, I don't really know. They're not going to play like this on offense forever, but not much about this other than like Jalen Brunson going 15 for 18. feels unsustainable. And the game before that, Jalen Brunson was completely out of rhythm, and we still scored like a bazillion fucking points. So like, and then even like other random bench stuff, like Hartenstein, like we're finally using Hartenstein as a little outlet under the hoop again. Like, we haven't really done that consistently where it's like, oh, Julius has pump fake like five times. Sometimes to keep the defense on his toes, he'll just do the little flip pass to Hartenstein, who will do the floater. And like, man, like, I have dangerously high expectations now of this team. The vibes are possibly too strong.
Yeah, no, I mean, I actually think, like, I know IQ's been shooting pretty well now for what seems like probably, what, since December 4th, since they made that rotation change. That's, like, what, 3 months about? But, like, you know, we still haven't seen any of those, like, 7 of 9 shooting games from him in a long time. From three, I'm talking about. Grimes kind of had his first volume explosion 3-point shooting game in a while yesterday. RJ's looking like the last few games, his three ball looks a lot cleaner to me. I like those are the three guys specifically that I feel like, again, I know Quickly shot the ball pretty well for a while, but I still feel like there's more there. And
yeah, the volume isn't like every night, it's like 2 of 4, 2 of 5, 3 of 5.
Yeah, so I think like the volume could go up for him, but like more, I mean, Grimes and RJ just feel like, I know they haven't shot the ball as well as you would want them to this year, respectively. But like, I think it's coming. Like, I just feel like it could definitely happen now. This is also part of the season. Seasons are long, Sometimes you have extended shooting slumps. Like, this feels like they could go on a 20-game run here for both of them where they, you know, maybe Grimes shoots like 41% from three and RJ shoots like 37% from three. And I know, actually, RJ, like, over his last however many games, he's actually shot 36% for three.
Yeah, he's been, just, like, pretty average, like, in a good way. From three.
His peaks and valleys are just so wild with that shit.
It's so funny. Yo, this reminds me, because I was watching part of the Celtics game today, and this was another sign that the vibes were good. Like, there were some plays, and this wasn't, like, at the end of the game. This was in the middle of the game, like, the second quarter and stuff, where RJ definitely missed Randall wide open like two or three times, but he ended up getting good shots or at least getting fouled or whatever, or sometimes he would turn it over. But like, my point is, even with all of this, like, RJ's still sometimes missing guys, but Randall, like, you can see him on one possession, he like jumped like, pass me the ball, but RJ ended up getting a good shot and a foul, and he dapped him up after. And like, you can see Randall and Brunson, I think, getting a little more comfortable finding a balance for incorporating RJ, and they're letting him kind of play through it a little bit. Like, he had five turnovers in the game, but he also has some really nice buckets in the game, and a lot of those turnovers were it was about, I think, two or three of them were dribbling, and the other two were, like, ambitious passing turnovers, where it's like, execution didn't work, but I see what you're going for. And I kind of think that's really cool. Like, that shit is, he needs to be able to work through this. And if he can work through this while the rest of the team cooks, and, you know, he's still going to contribute to that, right? Because he's still, like, throwing alley-oops to Mitch better than anyone else, and he's still getting layups really well, blah, blah, blah. So, like, in addition to the shooting that you mentioned, like, he's finally at a point where he's getting lots of touches, but it's still clearly the third guy, and it's not just lots of touches scattered throughout the game. Like, there'll be stretches where they're like, all right, we're going to let RJ cook. And eventually he's going to just, like, I mean, IQ's so instinctive that he's much better at it, but, like, when you have the roster set up for IQ to cook, you know he's going to make all the right decisions and all that. He's also used to kind of having that role now, where he's coming off the bench and being the guy. RJ was the guy by default last year. He's never been the guy with options, really. So this is kind of new for him in that sense, to have stretches of the game with Brunson and Randall where they're letting him cook, and he has Grimes as an outlet and Randall and Brunson as an outlet. So in a lot of ways, this is the first time he's cooking with shooting and scoring talent around him. So the numbers and the process is still a little shaky, but I think we're going to see some big RJ games soon because of that. And I think it's also showing up in his effort on the other end. I think him getting those stretches leads to him trying harder on defense, which is, you know, not how you want him to try harder on defense, but I'll fucking take it when he's doing it, because he's been doing a solid job of it. So it's just something to monitor that I noticed versus the Celtics.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that I don't know if they're, like, doing it in, I would say that's more, that seems like it's coming more from Tibbs than it is from Julius and Brunson.
Yeah, that's probably more accurate. It's more Julius and Brunson just dealing with it well.
Yeah, and I mean, that's fine. I think they need to do that, and they need to be okay with, like, him struggling, because he's still not been great offensively. He did play really well against the Pelicans, but, like, the Celtics game wasn't great. Yesterday was just not even a way to evaluate yesterday, because it was just like that game got so silly so fast. But, like, he had a little stretch to start the third where they were running a lot of offense through him, and his decision making wasn't bad, but it wasn't great. But it's like, okay, you guys got to deal with some of that shit sometimes. And what was the other game they played after the All-Star break? I can't remember it now. Pelicans, Celtics, Nets. Yeah, Pelicans, he was great. He was awesome in that game. But, like, they're definitely trying to get him more involved. And I do think they needed that. Tibbs has said some, like, interesting things about that. in a few post games. And I remember he said something in a post game a few weeks ago where he was like, or maybe it was even a week ago. I don't remember which one. But he said something like, he kept like commenting on like, we need RJ to be aggressive. We need RJ to be aggressive. RJ's aggression was good. They would ask him about something else and he'd be like, RJ was aggressive. That was good. So like, I do think some of it, like his weird struggles that he had were, it's like, I don't even know how to explain it because it's not passive, but like his drives were all so slow and him trying to be like super methodical all the time. And like, that's fine. There are times where you need to be methodical, but there are also times where it's like, dude, just fucking go be big. Like, go be gigantic and run into people and like see what happens. And
yeah, go post guys up.
Yeah, he hasn't been posting up as much lately. I do wonder if that's also like a thing where they're just trying to simplify some decision making for him. But like, yeah, I mean, I just think in general, his play right now is a bit better since All-Star break. The defense has definitely been improved. I still wouldn't say it's like amazing or anything. And again, yesterday his second half defensively wasn't good, but it's also like their entire team second half defensively wasn't good. They were all just kind of like, well, we're up like 70 points and we can score at will. So, like, we're not going to try on defense, which, again, do you want that? No, but it's also like, you know.
You may have earned it.
Yeah, it's also like everybody knows that happens. Like, so it just like you just be okay with that. And yeah, like, I don't know. The one thing I will say about RJ right now, which ties into quickly, is like when they play together without Brunson or Randall on the floor, every time RJ is the one creating offense or initiating the set, I don't feel like it's clean. I don't feel like they're getting good looks. I don't feel like there's flow to it. And then you compare it to like the possessions when IQ will be the one, you know, initiating, creating whatever in those looks, and it just looks a lot better. And you could see that the game that it was the most noticeable in was the Celtics game, where it was like they had that stretch at the start of the fourth quarter where it was like every time IQ got the ball, you know, he's like spin back mid range jumper, floater, like he's just getting to places and he knows
what his decision tree is way more clean. RJ, you can tell he doesn't read things quickly right now or ever, I guess. Like IQ, like the spin back to the mid range. He had two possessions like that. Those were counters. He was like, they're overplaying me. I'm going to use the counter. I know what shot I'm going to go to.
Well, RJ literally just doesn't have that shot. So like, this is where the RJ thing becomes tricky because I've talked about like, this is why I want to like stick with him for the time being, because I do think the Knicks need like a third creator. And yeah, you can tell me like, well, IQ can be that guy. Sure. But like, this is the NBA. Like we see this every year in the playoffs. You can never have enough of those guys. You just can't have enough guys that can create offense that can, that have like ancillary off ball skills to make them, you know, good next to other creators or useful next to other creators, at least, and are good defenders. Now RJ hasn't been a good defender this year. And obviously his 3-point shooting hasn't been great, but like he has the, like you see the contours of a player where you're like, okay, no, he can be that guy potentially. And I know people get frustrated. They're like, well, he's been in the league 4 years. How long are we going to have to wait? And I'm like, look, there's one thing between, if you don't think he's going to be a star anymore, like I'm like kind of there. Like I just don't know if you can, it would take him like the light bulb just would need to go off and he'd be like, oh yeah, I can get 5-6 assists a game. Oh yeah. Like, and if I do that, I'll be efficient from the field because I'll still probably average 20, but get rid of like the stupid like three or four shots I take a game. And like, yeah, it's still possible. But like, I think on aggregate, if you're going to weigh the odds because you get like 4 years of evidence, you'd probably reduce the odds of him hitting that upward bound ceiling. And I think you'd have to increase the odds of IQ hitting the upward bound ceiling. But the point is like, I still don't, like, even if I believe that IQ is a better prospect, which I do, and that IQ is ahead of RJ right now, on both ends of the floor, quite frankly, which I do, like, I still don't think that makes any sense as a, like, that should not be, like, the reason why you're like, well, we don't need RJ. That's stupid. No, you still need RJ because, look, I love Grimes. I think Grimes potentially could, like, become some type of creator, but quite frankly, we just haven't seen him have to do it at all, ever. So, I have no way, to, like, I'm sorry, doing it in Summer League is just not like
the last two games were the first time in like a million years we've seen him do off the dribble stuff,
and even that is always like catching it from somebody. Like, I still, how many pick and rolls has he run this year?
Like, hardly any. That's what I'm saying. The last two games, he had a couple of plays where he was relocating, and for once he got the ball not in the corner. He had like a mid-range pull-up. He's had a couple of times where he caught the ball above the break, and he just got busy. And he ends up passing it a lot of the time, just like he does when he drives from the corner. But it's definitely there. He doesn't get to do it. Either by choice or by role or whatever, however you want to allocate it, he doesn't get to do it. So, like, you're right. Like, maybe he does that in the future, but he's not doing that on a large volume this playoffs.
The only people that could know he's capable of doing it right now, and I mean this quite honestly, like, this is not sarcasm, this is not me making a joke, are, like, Tibbs and the coaching staff and the organization, like, front office people who see him in practice. Like, maybe he's doing that in practice. I don't know. It's possible. Like, I'm sure, like, if you're trying to develop guys, you probably have them do more stuff in practice. And I would tend to believe the idea that, like, Tibbs has these guys practice more stuff than he allows them to do on game days. But, like, I can't say that as a certainty. I have no read on that because I literally don't see it.
And right? Even if you live in a world where RJ's gone and Quentin Grimes is doing that, then you still don't have anybody in Quentin Grimes' role. So, like, it's a trickle-down effect. And like you said, in the playoffs, this isn't like everybody needs to be able to do that shit. Like, you need to have multiple guys who can do that shit at any given time. Like in the playoffs against a team like Cleveland, RJ is going to be forced to create. They're going to try to lock Brunson and Randle up. Sometimes it'll work, sometimes it won't, but sometimes it will, and it'll be on RJ, and sometimes quickly, and sometimes even Grimes, because that's how playoff ball is when everybody locks in. So, like, they'll have chances in the playoffs. Like, this is what happens in the playoffs. You have to end up using Plan D, Plan E, or whatever, right? Like, we saw that shit versus the Hawks 2 years ago, except nobody could fucking dribble.
Yeah, and I think, like, the thing with the RJ stuff with quickly, like, those groups, I don't know, like, I think they still grade out as a net positive over the year. I have to check, but, like, it just seems it seemed clunky this entire year for whatever reason. And maybe that's just my eyes deceiving me, but, like,
no, that's just anytime RJ is involved, it's clunky. That's his game. Like, it's not, he's not, because he's not passing and he doesn't have a lot of counters, it's going to be clunky. That's just what happens when he's on the ball.
Yeah. Like, I think you see teams covering, like, the, they run that pistol action for him. You see teams, what they're doing now is, when he comes up off it, they have the big show high. So then he has to pull it back out, and then he'll try to run a pick and roll the other way, and they'll ice it. So they'll just try and, like, show him to the sideline to his right hand, which he doesn't want to do. So, like, yeah, it ends up getting clunky, and they end up getting late in clock, and then, like, that kind of leads sometimes to him making decisions where you're like, that's a terrible shot. But, like, at the same time, if you look at the shot clock, you're probably like, okay, I mean, how we got here sucks, but I kind of understand why you maybe made this decision at this point in time. Yeah, I mean, for the season right now,
it's kind of deceptive, though, because, like, yes, late in the shot clock, we'll take it, but you used 7 seconds of the shot clock screening and rescreening and rescreening, and it works. Like, half the time, like, he ends up getting to his left anyway, but, like you said, by that point, it's, like, 12 seconds left or whatever.
Yeah, and so for the year, actually, those two, they're still a slight positive. 740 minutes played, with both of them on the floor, 1.71 net rating. I could actually, let me check that without Brunson.
He's going to be an X factor. Why you check that, man? Like as the third guy, like, what, this is what we're going to see in the playoffs. He's going to be put on the spot. And if he's not hooping, Tim's going to sit his ass down, and it's going to be IQ and heart. Like,
yeah, so their minutes together without either Brunson or Randle on the floor haven't been good. They played 298 minutes with either of them on the floor. That is a minus 5.93 net rating, 105.79 offensive, 111.73 defensive. I just want to see this real quick. But this is the part that's nasty, all right? This is the part that, like, why you have to be a little bit concerned about RJ to some extent is this guy. So the minutes with quickly without any of those three on the floor, okay? So none of Brunson, none of RJ, none of Julius Randle on the floor. He's played 226 minutes. That's a plus 5.93 net rating, 108.87 offensive rating, 102.95 defensive rating. RJ Barrett, okay, without any of the three on the floor. He has only played 25 minutes without any of those three on the floor this entire season. So, I mean, that sample doesn't even matter. It's actually a big negative, but it's literally 25 possessions. It's like 25 minutes, so who cares? It's just like he just needs – it's with Quickley specifically that he's – and I think I know why. I think he has this thing with Quickley where it's like he feels like he's higher in the totem pole. And so when they're on the floor together, you can kind of tell like RJ's like, it's my time to cook. And like it is kind of his time to cook, but it's also, I'm like, also, but it's also like kind of IQ's time to cook. And I'm like, I still think Quickley defers to him a little bit and he'll like give him the first possession, second possession or something. But like you can like, so even if Quickley has one good possession, like if he starts the quarter off the good possession, he'll probably give it to RJ the next time down. And like RJ
quickly handles that shit like a point guard, and RJ handles it like somebody who doesn't know when his next on-ball reps are going to be. That's what it is. Like, yeah. And this is what I was saying before with the starters. It's like I'm happy that through Tibbs' edict and Brunson and Randall tolerating it at least when they're up. That, like, on the one hand, I'm happy that he's getting stretches like that to make himself feel good, to get into a rhythm, to score. On the other hand, though, like, we're doing this right now because we're fucking spanking teams and we have possessions to spare. And, like, when the shit is close and the games are close and the clock is low, like, that's when it gets real dicey. And that's why you see Tibbs sometimes prefer other lineups that don't have him. And guys like IQ and Brunson are all much more adaptable because they're better shooters and they're just better, right? Like, full stop. So it is what it is. It's the vibes are really great right now and he's playing fine, but I think there's just like he's experimenting right now and the results of that experiment have a lot more implications than I think a lot of us otherwise would realize just because we're doing so fucking well that it's like, who gives a shit?
Yeah, and I the other part of it, like, I think you're right that, like, you need to let him feel like I can play off ball and be, like, more unselfish in these possessions because I know that, like, there's going to be this designated, like, 4 or 5 minute period each half where I get to be on ball. And I do, like, and people can, like, I get it if people think that's dumb and that's frustrating because it's not the most efficient, like, offense we have at our disposal, but to me that's actually like a good thing from Tibbs where he's actually valuing like, yes, I want to win some games now, but to win more long term, I'm aware that like I need to develop RJ and or at least give him the opportunity to develop, right? Into that type of a player. And like that's not to say he hasn't obviously given him those opportunities previously, but I did think like in the last month or so leading up to the All-Star break, it had been like very, I'm not even sure if his usage went down, but I do think like I would venture to guess his usage was very different than it had been at various points in the season, earlier in the season when he was kind of like a third amigo with them.
There's also some sneak benefits to doing that in the regular season now, in addition to what we've said. So like for all the nitpicking, like he's really good at getting Mitch involved. So that's another big plus. Brunson's too short. Randall's just trying to get buckets. So it's a lot easier for RJ. And, you know, letting Randall and Brunson take a fucking breather and just be off ball actually also helps. Like, you know, especially after the ridiculous stretch earlier in the year. Like, you can, you know, I mean, we're not the Warriors or the Jazz. Everybody's not fucking sprinting around in some movement offense. So when RJ and Mitch do their thing, that's a break. That's a break.
It's also like, I mean, I know Randall has done a much better job this year of like dumping off passes to Mitch, and Brunson does like hit him on a lob every 8 or 9 games. But like RJ is the one guy that consistently actually has like a rhythm with him in the pick and roll.
Yeah,
and I think like, you know, not that Mitch needs a bunch of touches to stay involved, but I do think like getting any big guy involved early in a game,
yeah,
is usually like the key to them not crying and being annoying for the rest. Like, I want more touches. But and it's like, remember last year where like we'd have like Mitch posting cryptic things like, you know, they don't let me touch the ball in the post. And I'm like, yeah, they don't. Correct. Like, that is 100% accurate. And that
meanwhile, right. this year on Twitter and Instagram, people ask him, and he's like, are you dumb? That's not how our offense works. Like, like, of course they don't touch the ball.
I mean, I'm just guessing here, but like, before you get paid, you're probably worried about that shit a lot more.
Of course.
Because you're like, am I going to get paid? Is this going to affect how much I get paid? Once he got paid, he's probably just like, okay, well, $60 million in the bank. We're good to go.
And even when RJ shoots, like, Mitch is right there. You know, Kobe assists, whatever. Like, so I think that little stuff does matter. Like, we don't talk about it as much as we used to back in the day. I know I sound like a fucking old guy on a rocking chair on my porch, but, like, feed the big, right? So he can run the court harder. Like, that shit still matters. And it matters for the role players, too. It matters for RJ. So, you do what you got to do, and
it'll always be true. What you think if Harden started every game just taking like 10 pull up threes and like doing his Houston Harden thing, that Embiid would be like cool? Just yeah, I'll anchor the defense and box guys out and like set screens for you, dude. Like no way. Like this isn't just like for, you know, role playing bigs. This is just how it works. Like all big guys ever in the history of basketball, other than like bench bigs who just kind of know that like they're there to be in. Any starting big, especially, like yeah, just get them a touch. That's it. You don't need to run a bunch of fucking offense for them. You got to get them like a touch and just make them feel good about themselves for a second. And like and even stuff like having Mitch touch the ball at the top of the key and then like go hand it off to somebody else. It's like, oh yeah, you're involved, dude. Definitely. Like yeah, you're key to this play. Don't worry. Like we need you to do this very difficult one dribble handoff to RJ Barrett. Like it's just part of how it is. But like I just think this team, you know, you mentioned before like the connective passing part of it. Like that stuff is there too, and that's made a big difference. And Hart's obviously made a huge difference with that. But like what I think you're seeing with Hart is like he amplifies others' skills, and like he's bringing them he's giving them way more juice in transition, like whether that be him grabbing and going or just him getting deflections, turnovers, him getting defensive rebounds, whatever it is, like he's just giving them way more juice on that end of it.
We have good transition players who don't get in transition. It's like we have a fucking engine, but we didn't have anybody to push start on that shit until Josh Hart came.
Yeah, and the Obi stuff, like, I mean, Obi didn't have a great game yesterday, which is, like, probably, he's probably the one guy you could argue had a bad game. But, like, it's, you can definitely see there's a difference or that we've gotten more out of Obi, at least in transition, since Hart came in. And it's not just, like, oh, Hart's the one feeding him, but it just, like, brings that entire, when he's on the floor, they just play collectively with, like, way more force and, like, speed.
Run proper fast breaks. That's the other thing. I need Benji, if you're listening, I need just like the Knicks midseason fast breaks made me want to fucking stab my eyes out with a spoon. Like everybody in the wrong lane, all like in the wrong place. Now it's just textbook shit now.
I saw them run a fast break a couple of games ago where it was like Grimes passed it to Art, like he passed it ahead to RJ. RJ's in the middle of the floor. It was the right play. He should advance it. It was like basically a 3-on-1 because Randall was filling on the right side of RJ. And somebody was like coming down the left side of the lane too next to RJ. It might have been Brunson. And I'm like the one thing Grimes has to do there is just like, just stand out at the top of the key because like if you might get a swing back pass for a top of the key three. Like, but what he did is like he passed it forward to RJ and then he somehow filled in between RJ and the guy on the left, who again I think was Brunson, and I'm like, how does this make sense? Like, and I think they got bailed out because RJ got fouled or something. But I just remember watching that. I'm like, this can't even be a coaching thing because like you should just know that's stupid. That's like you should never do that. And I've just seen too many of these guys. Like Randall has a really bad habit of this. of just like ignoring other, like where other people are running in transition and just like running down the middle of the lane and being like, I'm here. Hand raised. It's like, yeah, that's great, dude. But like, there's five guys here now. Like, thanks. Like, get the fuck out of here. He has a bad habit of doing that. I think RJ sometimes has a bad habit of just like thinking he can make transition threes. And I'm like, I don't actually remember you making a transition three ever. Yeah. So maybe just don't do that. But yeah, like you just see it with Hart. He's brought so much to the table. He plays with like obviously so much physicality. I think defensively over his career he's been kind of like a middling defender. But with what we have in place, exactly. I think he's just like what he does is so valuable. And the big thing with him is like, you know, oh, we need a big wing defender. He's not the optimal choice to be a big wing defender, but like he can do it. Like he can defend a guy like Tatum probably better than
he's quick and strong.
Well, he's kind of, I wouldn't say he's quick, like getting around.
I mean, quick compared to like RJ Barrett.
Yeah. He's quicker than RJ for sure. And like, he's also a guy that like can get stuck going over screens mostly because like RJ, they're both like super jacked and they're just like, what is this person doing here? Like, get away from me. Like, it's like, no, you actually have to like try to avoid them. You can't just like,
I just like love watching Josh Hart like close out on somebody, a wing, and then they have the advantage and they do a quick first step. And he mostly stays with them. It's just so refreshing instead of somebody just like RJ just getting blown by somebody despite RJ being like smaller than them or shorter than them.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, he plays angles pretty well. But yeah, he just makes a lot of sense. And like, I mean, this was the thing with Deuce too, where it's like, forget the offensive side of it, where like Hart just is more confident and instinctive in what he's doing on the floor at this point in their careers anyway than Deuce is. But like defensively, you know, you're running these units where it's like quickly Deuce and it's like your three would either be RJ or Grimes. And like, yeah, maybe Grimes is a better defender, RJ has better size. Either way, that's like a pretty small lineup to run out for extended stretches. And then you would get into situations where it's like Deuce has to defend a bigger guard or something. And it's hard. It's just difficult. And it's not any one player's particular fault. But like now when you go out with that bench unit, it's like, whether it's RJ, whether it's, you know, or whether it's Grimes as like the third guy, quickly Hart with any of those guys, it just makes sense. Whether it's Brunson, like, because quickly is, I know he's like the same size as Deuce, but he's just way better equipped right now to defending those bigger guards, I think. Whereas Deuce is way better equipped defending point of attack players. But like, it just opened up so many variations. And like, honestly, man, every time they play and like RJ comes in right to start the second and fourth quarters with quickly and with Hart, when they get into any type of rut and he just brings in Brunson for RJ, like the offense always just immediately starts flowing. Like they had a possession yesterday where as soon as RJ went out, you know, obviously Brunson comes in and they ran this play where like it was, you know, they run like a token screen for Brunson because they knew that Brooklyn had started trapping in the second half. He draws the trap, swings it to one side to Obi. And Obi, like, Randall's a good passer, but he's not a quick passer, which is why that first quarter yesterday was, like, so amazing. I was like, wow, you're making quick passes. This is incredible. But, like, Obi got it, and as soon as he got it, he saw that, like, quickly was open on the other wing, throws it over to him, and then somebody's closing out to quickly. Quickly just slashes into the paint, and you know, because he's attacking now a bent defense with like this gaping chasm in the middle of the floor, and he just gets the easiest floater that he's gonna get ever. And it's like you just see shit like that, and I'm like, that's the thing that even if Quickly drew a trap and made the same exact pass to Obi and he made the same exact pass to RJ, I'm not sure right now I don't trust RJ to just like grab and go. Like I don't trust him to do that, and I certainly don't trust him to be the one receiving the pass from quickly and then swinging a pass very like for lack of a better term quickly to the other side of the floor the way that Obi did. So it's just a weird thing with RJ where it's like his process needs to speed up or he just needs to be better at like the shot creation stuff he's doing. Like it's really that simple to me. And to do that, obviously, I do think Tibbs is doing the right thing of like assigning minutes for that. Just being like, yep, we're gonna have 3 minutes and this is what's gonna happen. So I mean, I do think like we should probably talk a little bit about Tibbs, because I don't know what the hell's happened the last month and a half or so, but like he's just doing a way better job. And like doing a way better job in a lot of ways that I didn't think he could do a better job. This isn't just him, like, you know, because I like, you know, he makes the rotation change and I'm like, well, this is better because he's finally just like playing better lineups, even though I don't love how many minutes he's allocating, how he's doing it, blah, blah, blah. But now I'm like watching his games and I'm like, okay, he's mixing and matching more. So you're getting more looks at like different groups. He's made way better adjustments in game lately. Like the Wizards game, his in-game adjustment was like really good. Just switching Randall onto Porzingis and having Mitch help off of like Denny or whatever bullshit fucking person they had on the floor that could shoot. It was just like, I'm like, I don't think I've seen him do this in a while. Like they were basically playing the defense that kind of like the Celtics do with Robert Williams, where they just had him hang out in one of the corners and then crash down on drives.
He did like, something like that versus Boston. He spent a lot when Horford and Rob Will was on the court. He was on Horford a lot.
Yeah, and so like they're just doing interesting things that they have not done before. Like they like even when Mitch was out, the first three games or the first two or three games, which however many it was, I just remember watching. I'm like, why are we playing drop with Jericho Sims? Like, why are we just playing pure drop with Jericho Sims? We whatever his flaws are, they're all of them are going to be exacerbated doing that. And it was miserable. We gave up like I think it was like 130 to the Raptors. We gave up like 140 to the Hawks. I'm just like, this is brutal. Like you can't do this. But like during then he adjusted. Like he started having Sims show out higher up the floor. You know, not necessarily trapping or blitzing, but like showing out higher up the floor, where it's not just like a pure deep drop coverage play. And you know, like you say, you talked about they're using Hartenstein a bit more. I think he's done a better job of like I mean the biggest thing, and you know, this pissed off RJ obviously at one point, but like just being willing to play the lineups that are like working to end games. Like, hey dude, that's cool that you're a $107 million man, but if you're not playing like it, like I've got Quickly, I've got Grimes, and I know I trust their base level right now more than yours to close this game because I already have Brunson and Randall. I don't necessarily need more shot creation. So like he's just pushing buttons that I'm like, okay, like this is exactly what I basically wanted. Like the last thing I would love for him to do, which, and I know this will never happen, is like play Randall at the five a little bit and play Hart at the four a little bit and just get funky with like four, who's at the four, who's at the five a little bit. That's all. But other than that, and like, yeah, maybe play Obi a little bit more, especially in like a 35 point blowout. That would be nice. But like overall, I mean, this is a drastic improvement over what we had seen for about like 2.5 seasons.
Yeah. The low hanging fruit was always just play your best players, like you said. And maybe he had to reach a certain comfort with who he was playing and their own proficiency and reliability before he began tweaking coverages. And I mentioned earlier, like we're at the point where chemistry wise, guys know what's going to happen before their teammates do things. And, you know, maybe Tibbs is developing his own chemistry of sorts, trying to versus the Nets, he, you know, didn't have Mitch and Hartenstein in full drop, right? Because all they're trying to do is get the Cam Thomas and Mikal Bridges mid-range shots for the most part. And he's just, I don't know, he's making some more of those in-game tweaks, like you said, or game-to-game tweaks, because something like that, the altered drop, that's probably something you decide ahead of time, not even in the game necessarily, if you're a sensible coach. So he's just being a little more open, and I think playing IQ and Josh Hart more, who are two defenders who he trusts to call audibles and who can actually execute those audibles, also works. I think it just makes his job easier. It makes him look better. Josh Hart is probably the one guy on the roster who can leave his assignment entirely and gamble for a steal credibly. And that shit matters, right? And IQ, you know, his flawless rotations, we've talked about that plenty of times. So the few times he does deviate, IQ doesn't even deviate that much. He just does the scheme perfectly. So it's not even really deviation there. So it's, like you said, there's still some other things left for him to do that are easy. There's still some hard puzzles left to solve, which is all the RJ Barrett stuff.
Before we continue this discussion, though, NBA fans, it's time to bring the hoops action to the palm of your hand with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. This week, new customers can bet $5 and win $200 in bonus bets instantly. Plus, for a limited time, all new and existing customers can get a no-sweat same-game parlay every day. Go to the DraftKings Sportsbook app today, opt in, and place a same-game parlay on any NBA game. And if it doesn't hit, you'll get a bonus bet back. Own the app now and sign up with code TBPN. New customers can bet $5 on the NBA and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA with code TBPN. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details.
That's why the Pelicans game was so interesting, because I'm like, that's what the glimpse was. That was like, oh, if RJ Barrett plays well, we're just going to annihilate teams.
Oh my God, dude. I even thought about it watching the Celtics and the Nets game. Like, the fucking turnovers he had, like, I know they were
the one
like
in the Celtics game that drove me nuts was he drove. It was in the fourth. The one that it drove me nuts because it was like, it was the right play, but it was an example of him having already decided what he was going to do without actually reading the floor. Like, so he drove off the screen, kind of wide, to the kind of like to the baseline, basically. So driving baseline, and, you know, because of how the Celtics guarded it, Brogdon had to 2v1 on the weak side, and he cheated over more to the wing than the corner. And, I mean, some of that has to do with, like, you got Robert Williams and Horford down there. Like, you kind of think that, okay, maybe they can cut off the corner pass better than the wing. But it was like, if he's going to make a pass there, it had to be to the corner, because Brogdon was, like, pretty clearly in position to, and he was just like, he was there. It was right to him. And I was like, that was the one that pissed me off. Because I'm like, I know you. I've watched you play for like way too long. I know that you had already decided that that was what you were going to do. This was not like I made a bad read. It was like, this was the read the whole way. This was, I was never not going to make this pass. But yeah, it'll get there. And I think when it, I mean, hopefully it gets there. But like, if it does, when it does, whatever you want to say, again, like that Pelicans game, you're seeing that, like, that was just a pure example of, like, that's the act, that's the, you know, real world example of what do the Knicks look like if RJ plays well? And it's like, because right now he has to shoot well, score well to play well. His defense has been better, but, like, you're not going to get a big bump from him overall without him scoring well. And that's the best game he scored since All-Star break. So it's like, oh, so this is what it looks like. And I don't even think Brunson played that well in the game, if I remember correctly. Or Randall, I don't remember who. The Pelicans game, somebody didn't play that well. But, like, I don't remember who. But it was like, oh, so it doesn't matter if they don't shoot well in this scenario. Because RJ did. And I'm like, this is amazing. Like,
I didn't know we were allowed to do that.
Yeah, this is awesome. Let's do this all the time. But, yeah, I mean, again, like, if he gets going, like, I don't know. Like, I get pretty scary thoughts of, like, what this team could do.
It's why they're hanging on to him, right? Like, it's that role of a third creator in the starting lineup who can execute Tibbs' plan of just drive and spray. Like, it would make the offense click at another level. And the crazy part is he's physically in a better place than he was before. So he is getting by a lot of guys. Like, sometimes it's clean blow-bys. Other times it's, like, you know, the craft and the spins and the hooks and all that. But, like, he's creating advantages. Now it's just like, okay, dude, like, you did it. There's two other guys in front of you. Just share the ball now. And, I mean, I've been saying this shit since he was at Duke. But, like, whoever can get him to do that is going to reap the benefits. And if nobody does, then he's just going to kind of forever. He's just going to be annoying. He'll be good, but, like, just annoying. It is what it is. And I don't know. I need Johnny Bryant to have whatever intervention he did with Julius. I need him to hit off RJ in the offseason, or perhaps before the playoffs if he could swing it. and just give him a talk, because that you want to. If RJ started doing that shit before or during the playoffs, then this team would be a very big fucking problem.
Yeah. Because, like, I'm just watching some of these other games, and it's like, you know, you have Philly right now. I don't know what the fuck they're doing. They're out. They're in their ass end of them right now by the Mavericks.
None of these teams, except for the Bucks, put any fear in me. Maybe, like, if the Suns get going or whatever, and, that's really it. Like, I'm, like, fucking halfway to delusion right now. Like, Embiid is incredible, and Jaws, like, grifts 30,000 fouls, and even Mitch can't stop him. But Mitch has a better chance of stopping him than other fucking centers in the league. And I don't trust the rest of the Sixers to do what they gotta do in the fucking playoffs, right? Like, I'm not saying we would beat them, of course, but this isn't like teams that are gonna spank the Knicks.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.